and I'm your brother, Fire Mary Diesel Ogaya, and welcome to the Class War Battlefield Podcast. When I started this show in 2011, my goal was to inform. Obviously, the show has evolved, a lot of new topics, a lot of new thoughts, taking on metaphysics, some spirituality, hitting you with all types of things that you may have never heard of, and some that you have. It's always lively. But now I'm coming to you to ask you to help me prolong this podcast. For years, I have been producing this podcast for free on your behalf. I am now coming to you to ask you to support this work. $2, $5, $10, $20, $50, whatever you can do, please do.
And now, the definition.
Mega Magga, Ultra Magga, Magga King.
We gotta stop the Magga King.
I'm the Magga King. Mega Magga, Ultra Magga, Magga King.
Get the FBI loaded up.
I'm the Magga King.
I had a great relationship with President Cheese, now president for life. I call him King. He says, no, I am not King.
I'm the Magga King.
You know what Magga stands for? Make America great again. Unfortunately, we have so many bad things happening to our country, we can't celebrate until we start winning 22, which is a few days. We're gonna win in 24, we're taking back that beautiful house.
I'm the Mega King.
These guys come at you left and right on such bullshit. You've never seen anything like it. And essentially, they don't want to say this, but they said Trump was 100% right. The election was rigged and stolen, and we're not gonna let it happen again. Mega Magga, Ultra Magga, Magga King.
We gotta stop the Magga King.
I'm the Magga King.
Mega Magga, Ultra Magga, Magga King.
Get the FBI loaded up.
I'm the Magga King.
Did anybody here vote for Biden? If you did, you don't have the courage in this group to admit it. We're long gone from socialism. We're into communism. The only thing they do well is misinformation. It was Russia, Russia, Russia. Ukraine, Ukraine, Ukraine. And then the Mueller witch hunt, where the conclusion was no collusion. Do you think Biden could say that? The conclusion was no collusion. You think Biden's gonna get that?
Come on, man.
He violated a document. He's violated. Every other president takes their documents. I'm the only one. I can't have a document. But everyone else, they got them all over the place. They have them in Chinese restaurants and bowling alleys. You know that, right? But it's okay for them, but not for Trump. Mega Magga, Ultra Magga, Magga King.
We gotta stop the Magga King.
I'm the Magga King.
And I'm gonna ask a man who's a great man, actually. Kenneth Copeland, come up and say a prayer.
Well, it's about time.
By covenant, this nation belongs to God. Therefore, voting is a secret trust. And if you don't vote, hush. I was in Jerusalem, where the American embassy is on Donald Trump Avenue.
Oh, I like that.
I've lived through a lot of presidents. This is the only one I have ever seen that wears red, white, and blue. That's the reason I copied his suit. I copied his suit. Suit. That's the reason I copied his suit. I copied his suit. Our first president opened his Bible at 17th chapter of Genesis, and he bowed his knee, and he said,
Peace on me,
I'm the Magga King.
Magga Magga, Ultra Magga, Magga King.
We gotta stop the Magga King.
I'm the Magga King.
Magga Magga, Ultra Magga, Magga King.
Get the FBI loaded up.
I'm the Magga King.
But quickly first, to follow up on our show yesterday, as news was just breaking at the time that Republicans in the U.S. House had successfully moved to vacate the Speaker's chair for the first time in American history, and removed Republican House Speaker Kevin McCarthy from his post. That happened just before airtime. And since then, McCarthy has now announced that he does not plan to run for the job again, as the House is now largely closed for business, essentially, until next Tuesday, according to the GOP majority, while they regroup and try to figure out where the hell to go from here. That won't be easy, as the House, by and large, is constrained from doing pretty much anything until a speaker has been selected, and clearly the Republicans, who led the coup against their own speaker, did not seem to have a plan in place for what to do next. McCarthy was removed by a vote of 2016 to 2010, as we noted yesterday, after Republicans led by Matt Gaetz of Florida voted to unseat him as Speaker. And they were joined by all House Democrats, who decided not to support the Republican Speaker. After he had double-crossed them on several deals, he had announced an evidence-free impeachment inquiry of Joe Biden. He even tried to blame them for McCarthy's problems coming up with a Republican bill to keep the federal government from shutting down last weekend. The eight House GOP mutineers who ousted McCarthy were Congressmembers Matt Gaetz of Florida, Andy Biggs of Arizona, Tim Burchett of Tennessee, Eli Crane of Arizona, Nancy Mace of South Carolina, Matt Rosendale of Montana, Bob Good of Virginia, and Ken Buck of Colorado. So, who has now thrown their hat in the ring to replace McCarthy? Well, Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio was the first to announce that he will be running to be the next speaker, a move likely to prompt praise from House conservatives, as Politico reported today. But they noted that his candidacy will likely run into Majority Leader Steve Scalise of Louisiana, who has now also tossed his hat in the ring and has worked to court the same far, far right base in Congress. Jordan told reporters Wednesday, quote, "I think I can unite the conservative base and the party and the conference." And of course, if there's one thing I can think of when it comes to Jim Jordan, it's being a uniter. In a letter to his Republican colleagues on Wednesday, Jordan, the House Judiciary Chair and the so-called Freedom Caucus member, formally requested their support, noting, quote, "We are at a critical crossroads in our nation's history. Now is the time for our Republican conference to come together to keep our promises to Americans. We can focus on the changes that improve the country and unite us in offering real solutions. But no matter what we do, we must do it together." There he goes, uniting again. Jordan has worked closely with Oversight Committee Chair James Comer of Kentucky on the impeachment inquiry into Joe Biden and had become a close ally of now former Speaker Kevin McCarthy. He is a Trump ally with the GOP conference, but really who isn't at this point? And one of the many chairs to have called for Congress to defund the police. But in this case, Republicans are calling to defund the entire Department of Justice because they are, you know, enforcing law and order by holding Donald Trump accountable for crimes. So why not? It wouldn't be the first time the House Republicans have elected a former wrestling coach with disturbing allegations regarding sexual abuse of students in his past. And not long after Jordan's announcement, House Majority Leader Steve Scalise officially announced he would, too, be seeking the speakership. It's unclear if either could earn the backing from GOP centrists, however, such that there are any. I think the better description that was Politico describing them as centrist, the better description would be Republicans who won their seats in districts previously won by Joe Biden. But those members, as they note, are necessary, a necessary faction given Republicans' tiny majority in the House and unanimous Democratic opposition. It has long been an open secret that the Louisiana Republican, Steve Scalise, had aspirations for that top job, a fact that reportedly caused tense relations between him and McCarthy. So we will see who else steps forward over the next week. There are now two candidates, I guess. I'm sure the process will all run very smoothly and professionally.
Sadly, we've seen this movie before.
Yes, when it took, 15 rounds of voting to install McCarthy about just 9 months ago. So this process will either take more or less than 15 rounds. That remains to be seen. Now, when I got off air yesterday and went to write up the show for posting over at brandblog.com, I sort of joked at the blog about the GOP chaos in Congress, that by the week's end would all end up somehow being the fault of Democrats. Well, apparently, I guess I was not joking at all. I thought I was. Apparently, I wasn't.
That only took about 5 minutes.
Moments after the successful motion to vacate on Tuesday afternoon, apparently, an enraged Speaker Pro Tem, that would be Republican Patrick McHenry, lashed out at Democrats, for supporting the Republican resolution by notifying former Democratic Speaker Nancy Pelosi and her second-in-command, Steny Hoyer, that they must vacate their Capitol hideaway offices on Wednesday as punishment for what those dastardly Democrats did. Now, Pelosi, as it turns out, was not even in Congress on Tuesday. She was not even in D.C. on Tuesday. But she did offer a response in a statement today, quote, "With all of the important decisions that the new Republican leadership must address, which we are all eagerly awaiting, one of the first actions taken by the new Speaker pro tempore was to order me to immediately vacate my office in the Capitol. Sadly, because I am in California to mourn the loss of and pay tribute to my dear friend Dianne Feinstein, I am unable to retrieve my belongings at this time. This eviction," she said, "is a sharp departure from tradition. As Speaker, I gave former Speaker Hastert a significantly larger suite of offices for as long as he wished." Speaker Hastert is now serving time in prison for that sexual abuse of minors that I mentioned, former speaker being a Hastert being a former wrestling coach. Pelosi continues, "Office space doesn't matter to me, but it seems to be important to them. Now that the new Republican leadership has settled this important matter, let's hope they get to work on what's truly important for the American people." Don't hold your breath. Of course, they are still busy blaming Democrats today for their own party's failures. And I was half joking because I did figure the media would somehow figure out some way to blame all of this on Democrats.
But, oh, definitely.
But boy, they're all moving a lot faster to do that than even I expected. This is an issue where they're blaming Democrats for their own party's failures and the fact that their own Republican Speaker of the House made a deal with the Republican far right in Congress that any one member of Congress could move at any time to file a motion to vacate that would require an immediate vote on whether the Republican Speaker should remain in his job or not. So obviously, when Republican Matt Gaetz did that and seven other Republicans joined all of the Democrats to vote against the Republican House Speaker, well, it's all Democrats' fault somehow. How? Well, George W. Bush's sleazy former press secretary, Ari Fleischer, for example, he tweeted, quote, "Unbelievable. The Democrats, with the help of Matt Gaetz and a handful of GOP members, just ousted the Republican Speaker of the House." Yes, it was the Democrats with the help of Matt Gaetz. Help being, you know, filing a formal resolution to vote on vacating the chair. The Daily Beast's Matt Lewis argued, quote, "You can't blame Dems for the blow that right-wing bomb throwers landed on Kevin McCarthy, but what you can say is that they failed to do the right thing on behalf of the American people." The right thing, I guess, being voting for a Republican House Speaker that all of the Democrats opposed 15 times on every single ballot just last January, the way the opposition party pretty much always does in every House Speaker election, pretty much since time immemorial. Darn those Democrats betraying the American people.
God. I mean, expecting, demanding that Democrats are somehow obligated to vote for the Republicans, speakers, is just insane.
Dan McLaughlin, the senior writer over at the Right Wing National Review, he tweeted, quote, "Remember, Democrats may say they want more responsible Republican leadership, but they will side against that every chance they get, and then complain if anyone tries to hold them responsible for their own choices." Their own choices, I guess, to vote against the guy who broke his word by unilaterally calling for an evidence-free impeachment inquiry of the Democratic president, Joe Biden, and blamed Democrats for the near shutdown of the federal government over the weekend, even after every single Democrat voted with Kevin McCarthy for a 45-day continuing resolution to keep the government open when a majority of Republicans voted against the Republican speaker. Well, darn those Democrats. And finally, David Marcus, a right-wing columnist at Fox News and other wingnut outlets, he charged, quote, "Make no mistake, it was Democrats who ousted McCarthy today. Republicans voted over 90% against it. They just needed Gates's help to do it." Democrats, I guess. Tom Nichols of The Atlantic sort of summed up the responses to all of these knuckleheads when he pointed out, quote, "Republicans are incensed that Democrats didn't stop Republicans from attacking Republicans." And ProPublica's John Harwood accurately criticized those in the corporate media who have been responding to all of this by, you know, claiming that this proves once again that American politics is broken. Harwood tweeted, quote, "If American politics were broken, we'd have seen things like this happen when Democrats controlled the House, by the way, by the same slim 5-vote margin, but we didn't," notes Harwood. "What's broken, very specifically, is the Republican Party." Well, thank you, John. You are absolutely right. And I hope the rest of the corporate media somehow figures that out. But again, I'm not holding my breath. As David Kurtz writes at the Talking Points memo today, "There's a lot to love about the downfall of Kevin McCarthy. He deserved everything he got. The House GOP is a colossal mess." He quotes John Harris over at Politico, who notes about McCarthy, quote, "At the start, his speakership was effectively an optical illusion. At the end, it was an exercise in self-abasement." But, observes Kurtz, "this is not really about Kevin McCarthy. He's a stand-in. Before him were the chronically debased Paul Ryan and John Boehner. The House GOP has been on this merry-go-round for more than a decade now. McCarthy's downfall is another symptom of the same underlying pathologies. A cultish GOP enthralled to a would-be autocrat, anti-majoritarian structural impediments, a surge in right-wing extremism, white resentment and grievances channeled into a burn-it-all-down fever. It's why spending even a moment purporting to analyze whether Democrats, quote, joined the MAGA right to depose McCarthy is foolishness. This is about right-wing politics in America." Kurtz adds, "I'm a firm believer in the credo that things can always get worse. Not as a lament," he notes, "or a throwing up of the hands, but as a cold-eyed assessment of the road ahead. With McCarthy out, things can definitely get worse," he notes. And of course, when they do, we will know who to blame. The Democrats.
Good evening from New York. I'm Chris Hayes. A little over 24 hours ago, for the very first time in all of American history, a House caucus deposed their own speaker. A group of hardline members of the Republican majority, led by Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz, forced a vote to vacate the Speaker's office, ousting Kevin McCarthy. Now, I'll admit, it is not super clear why Gaetz and his allies thought this was a good idea. The move left a lot of members of their own party bewildered and downright furious. And it has sparked a resurgence of a consistent theme in this political era. Whenever the Republican Party or its leadership acts in a particularly egregious, norm-shattering fashion, conservative politicians, members of the conservative media, and even many members of the mainstream media rush to find some reason to blame Democrats. We've seen it over and over. After Donald Trump won the Republican primary in 2016, it was Democrats who got the blame. You see, liberals were too mean to Mitt Romney in the previous presidential cycle, helping to inoculate Trump and clear the way for him. People still make this argument to this day. During the first Trump impeachment, Republicans tried to blame then Speaker Nancy Pelosi for their failure to convict the president. It was not their own political calculation or cowardice or moral blindness. No, it was Nancy Pelosi who was at fault for the way they voted. And here's the thing. The worse Republican dysfunction gets, the harder conservatives and commentators seem to work to find any reason to identify Democrats as the root cause of it all. It is almost comical. And so, just like clockwork, we are hearing all sorts of folks blaming liberals for Kevin McCarthy's ouster as Speaker, even McCarthy himself.
I think today was a political decision by the Democrats.
Democrats just removed the Republican Speaker.
Democrats basically turned on Republicans and ousted Kevin McCarthy.
Every one of the Democrats voted against McCarthy.
That's what you get for trusting a Democrat.
I know.
The Democrats who voted to oust Kevin McCarthy, they could have done something about it. They could have thrown him a life raft.
I think a lot of these Democrats on the Problem Solvers Caucus need to be asked, why did you make this decision? Why didn't you step in? Why didn't you cut a deal with McCarthy?
They're all in this town saying, well, I want to work with the other side. Yesterday was the chance, and they failed badly.
I think there was an opportunity for folks to put the country above the insanity. I think it, you know, left a lot of people with a bad taste in their mouth.
Oh, you had a bad taste in your mouth? Because the Democrats didn't do what you wanted. Is that right, Mike Lawler, running in a +10 Biden district in the state of New York? We have even seen the interim Republican Speaker, Patrick McHenry of North Carolina, last seen banging that gavel very hard, and very angrily, exacting a little petty revenge against the Democrats for their betrayal. He ordered Speaker Emerita Nancy Pelosi and former Democratic leader Steny Hoyer to vacate their what's called hideaway offices, these small offices in the Capitol itself, in what Pelosi described as a sharp departure from tradition. I should note, Pelosi wasn't even present for the vote to remove McCarthy. She didn't vote against him. She's been in San Francisco for the funeral of the late Senator Dianne Feinstein. So yesterday, all the Democrats who were present in the House faced a tactical question about what to do in this nearly unprecedented situation. Remember, it's been more than a century since the last time a House caucus had to decide on how to vote on vacating a speaker. And the only reason that we had this vote was because the rules package negotiated by Gaetz and the holdouts and Kevin McCarthy. They created the conditions for the vote to happen in the first place. And we have certainly never seen this level of House dysfunction before. It's genuinely historic. And I'll say there really were arguments on both sides about how Democrats should handle the vote. I talked to a bunch of people yesterday as I was reporting this out. But those arguments were arguments about how the Democratic caucus should exercise its own political interests and the interests of those people they represent. The idea that Democrats should have protected Kevin McCarthy for the good of the country is nonsense. First of all, if Kevin McCarthy wanted Democrats to vote for him in this vote that only came about because of the rules package he negotiated, Kevin McCarthy, who's a big boy, could have tried to persuade Democrats to make a deal with them. That's the way politics works. He did not do that. In fact, he reportedly waited until the last minute to call the Democratic leader, Hakeem Jeffries. And his allies said, pointedly, publicly and privately, that McCarthy was opposed to cutting any deals with Democrats. But the even deeper issue at play, as one House Democratic staffer explains in a great thread today, was just basic trust. Quote, we did not trust Kevin McCarthy and he gave us no reason to. He could have done so. And I suspect saved his gavel through fairly simple actions. He chose not to do that. Democrats could not make a deal with Kevin McCarthy. They could not support his speakership because his word means nothing. They could not trust him. Keep in mind, McCarthy was already in front of all of us. I mean, he wasn't secretive about this. He was in the process of ripping up the biggest deal he ever made on the debt ceiling. Right? They cut the deal with Joe Biden, and then folks in his caucus got mad about the deal, and he was about to go and undercut that deal, rip it up. There was no reason for Democrats to believe that he would not turn around and rip up another deal with them tomorrow. In fact, he had already promised his caucus that he would do that. So he had to be lying to someone, either lying to his caucus or lying to the Democrats if he cut a deal with them. But he's lying to someone. What good would it do them to save McCarthy and then the next day watch him push forward an impeachment of Joe Biden, massively cut social funding, put a whole bunch of awful poison pill provisions into must-pass legislation, steer the country into another shutdown? As Talking Points memo founder Josh Marshall points out, Republicans' bad behavior and destruction is assumed in Washington. It is given. It's like gravity. Everyone knows and expects it. Everyone else has to work around it. That means that Democrats have to be the ones to figure out how to make the government work. Of course, the dysfunctional, misbehaving Republicans are all grown adults with moral agency. Like, they're responsible for their actions. They make decisions. They can do good things or bad things. So I cannot quite believe this needs to be said. But the people to blame for Republicans blowing up their own speaker are Republicans.
Oh, my goodness. For the first time since 1876, the Speaker of the House has been booted. That's right. Congressman Matt Gaetz of Florida, he followed through on his decision to get rid of Speaker Kevin McCarthy, saying he did not govern accordingly. Eight Republicans voted to oust McCarthy. So here's actually what happened. There initially was a vote to actually consider the resolution. Guess what? All Democrats voted for it. 11 Republicans voted for it as well. That's when it then led to an hour of floor debate as to whether or not to get rid of McCarthy. After that, then that was the vote. It was 216 to 206. Six folks did not vote. And so as a result, McCarthy, the position has been vacated. He has been booted. He has served 263 days. Look, he can't blame anybody but himself. He's the one who cut the deal that allowed for even one Republican to move to vacate the position. He cut all those deals in order for him to get the speaker's job. Speaker pro tem Patrick McHenry, if y'all want to see how frustrated my man was, watch this as he gaveled the House to close. Watch this.
Admitted by the speaker, pursuant to the rule, acts as speaker pro tem until the election of a new speaker, and bestows the authorities of the office of speaker upon the speaker pro tem to the extent necessary and appropriate to that end. In the opinion of the chair, prior to proceeding to the election of a speaker, it would be prudent to first recess for the relative caucus and conferences to meet and discuss the path forward. Accordingly, pursuant to clause 12A of rule 1, the chair declares the House in recess, subject to the call of the chair.
It was not happy at all. You know what? Come on, Patrick. Go ahead and show us that gavel again. Go ahead. Show y'all. He was a little perturbed. Watch.
Chair declares the House in recess, subject to the call of the chair.
I think he was a little upset by that. Again, look, Democrat minority leader Hakeem Jeffries, he made it perfectly clear that they were not going to just stand there and play any of these little silly games with Republicans. And in fact, I saw one story the reporters were putting out there that said that you had some Republicans who were calling moderate Dems, begging them to vote with Republicans not to get rid of McCarthy. Why? Why? You had Jeffries. He went on various media outlets talking about this year. In fact, this was him earlier today in the hallways of Congress, making it clear where him and the Democrats stood. Watch this.
This is a serious, solemn, and sober moment. House Democrats are going to continue to put people over politics and to fight to make life better for everyday Americans. From the very beginning, that has been our objective, and it will continue to be our sole focus, delivering for the American people. We encourage our Republican colleagues who claim to be more traditional to break from the extremists. In the chaos, in the dysfunction, in the extremism, we are ready, willing, and able to work together with our Republican colleagues, but it is on them to join us to move the Congress and the country forward. Thank you.
Kevin McCarthy going to be
let me remind everybody that it was Democrats who saved the butt of McCarthy by voting to fund the government. His Republicans, they failed on that. And what did McCarthy then do? McCarthy then decided the next day to go on Face the Nation with Margaret Brennan and actually trash the Democrats. Watch this.
Were you confident we wouldn't shut down?
I was confident I could get something on the floor to make sure the option that we would not.
But
that
you weren't
our
sure
military
it was going to pass.
Well, I wasn't sure it was going to pass. You want to know why? Because the Democrats tried to do everything they can not to let it pass. They did
dilatory. Democrats were the ones who voted for this.
Did you watch
number than Republicans to keep the continuing resolution alive.
Did you watch the floor yesterday?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
90 Republicans voted against it.
Okay, so let's walk through what actually happened. First of all, the Democrats stood up and did dilatory actions, asked to adjourn. So was that supporting to adjourn? Then they used the magic minute. They went as far as pulling the fire alarm, not to try to get the bill to come up. Look,
that's
Democrats
Jamal
stick together, Goodman. But they did not want the bill. They did not. They were willing to let government shut down for our military not to be paid. No, I wasn't. We are going to make sure we keep it open while we finish the job we're supposed to do.
Guess what? Today, this morning, in the Democratic caucus, when they played that video, they were like, you know what? We don't give a damn about Kevin McCarthy. I keep trying to explain to people that you can't sit here and trash the very folk who literally are saving your behind. These are the people who saved his butt. He could not get anything done. He couldn't get anything done by his own party. So therefore, he had to depend on Democrats to get it done. So what does he then do? He decides to go on national television, trash the Democrats, and they were like, "Nah, player, we good with that." So, you know what? What did Dion say? Dion said, "Give me my theme music." This is what it sounds like to the Democrats right here. This is what it sounds like.
Walk that trick, get him. 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 Walk that
trick. That's what it sounded like right there. All right, let me bring in my panel. Mustafa Santiago Ali, former senior advisor for environmental justice at the EPA out of D.C., Joe Richardson, civil rights attorney out of L.A., Randy Bryan, DEI disruptor out of D.C. Hey, Mustafa, if you need me to save your ass, don't talk about me like a dog, or guess what? We're going to whoop that trick. And that trick right now is Kevin McCarthy.
Yeah, he definitely got pimped out. I mean, it's amazing.
They went and got the baby powder on his ass.
It slapped the hell out of him. But my auntie said, "You play with the devil, eventually you're going to get burned." And that's exactly what happened to him. I mean, he created this situation, as you shared with folks. You know, the reality is there's nothing anyone in this country can do where 1,000% of people are going to be in support of. So for you to give the power to individuals that if just one person wants to get rid of you, then they have the ability to at least bring that up. Shows that you're not very intelligent as a leader or as a speaker of the House. That's just dumb to begin with. You know, the other part of it is that not only has he continued to trash Democrats since he was elected after he got some assistance from folks, is that he continued to also make sure that no significant policies were being able to be passed, in some instances brought up for votes, and a number of other dynamics. So there was no reason for Democrats to come to his rescue, if you will, because they knew what was going to play out after they actually did that. So now he has to deal with the situation that he created. And of course, as I've said before, the Republican Party right now loves chaos. And because of chaotic situations, he found himself caught up in that.
Oh my God, he found himself caught up in that. And Randy, the one that got me was, again, for the Republicans calling the Democrats. I mean, literally one story said they were begging them, please vote with us to keep McCarthy. And they were like, nope, come on.
Yeah, nah. Yeah, nah. And why?
They were like, nope, ain't doing it.
And why should they? I mean, white mediocrity is on display right here. And it is, if it weren't so serious, if this weren't our government, it would be funny. I mean, the man begged. I mean, how many votes did we have to do to get him in there? And then he didn't last, what, 200 something days, and he's out of there. And what's even crazier is that the person, Gates, who put up, you know, that first started to kick him out, he's a fraud too. Haven't we found out that he's lied about half of his resume? I mean, the level of hot mess is just burning hot. It's lava hot with the Republicans right now.
What do you make of the bad apple theory? You got, maybe 8 bad apples in the House of Representatives. If we could just straighten them out, Republican governance yes. in the House of Representatives would go smoothly.
Yeah, so let's just back up for a second. So the two alternatives here are Jordan and Scalise, who both voted not to certify the election of the President of the United States. So, you know, think about this, Lawrence. I've often thought, what is it like to work in the Biden White House in congressional liaison? And you have to go over and you have to talk to people who, I mean, okay, maybe they don't like your boss. You're used to that. You dealt with that when you worked on the Hill. But they don't think that your boss is a legal president. Where do you begin with that? It's just such dysfunction. And at the heart of it is why does the Republican Party exist now? There is no governing philosophy like you've been talking about all night. It exists to defeat Democrats and elect Republicans. And that's sort of a definition of like a cartel or a syndicate, like OPEC. Why does no one ask OPEC what its higher purpose is? They sell oil. And the Republican Party is just lost.
Yeah, if they believed in something, you could organize around that. And you've pointed out that this was a party that said for decades that it wanted to reduce or control or cut government spending in different ways. We know there was a certain amount of gamesmanship in that, these things they were afraid of cutting. But then Donald Trump comes in and they forget all of that. They never mention it. They raise the debt ceiling for Donald Trump whenever necessary. The debt skyrockets under Donald Trump. They abandoned all sorts of things that we thought they thought prior to Donald Trump exposing, as you put it, that it was all a lie.
Yeah, you know, all of these things that we put forward as Republicans as deeply held values turned out to be marketing slogans. I don't know any other conclusion to come to. People don't abandon deeply held beliefs in a couple of years unless something extraordinary happens to counter them. But it's not just that the party drifted away from these principles, aren't they? They're actively opposed to them. I mean, character counts. I mean, what happened to that? Personal responsibility. Now, if you accept personal responsibility, you're a chump. You're a sucker. Strong on Soviet Union. Now the pro-Putin element of American politics is in the Republican Party. There just is absolutely no reason that the party can articulate a governing philosophy. I mean, say what you will about pick Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders has a philosophy of government. He can argue with you. Mm-hmm. He can hate it. You can love it. But he can articulate it. I don't think anybody on the conservative side can do that with any credibility now.
And as to Matt Gaetz's future in the House of Representatives, this talk today about, oh, why don't we just kick him out of our group of Republicans? I haven't heard anybody say a word that can in any way change the Matt Gaetz dynamic in the House of Representatives.
Yeah. So, you know, what did they do when they when McCarthy was speaker? Think about that. You had these ridiculous investigations, these faux impeachments. They weren't really working on anything that improved anybody's life. And at the root of it really is this sense that the party can't articulate what it believes. So in a situation like that, the person who's the loudest, craziest fan who run onto the field, you know, shirtless and get tackled, that's the person that gets attention. And this idea that somehow the Republican Party is going to revert to some normalcy, it's just a myth. It's not there. It's not going to happen. And the only way I think that the party can save itself is to lose. You have to defeat it again and again.
And from the ruins build something.
I think that there is a need for a center-right party. There is a need for two different philosophical governing philosophies in America to be able to articulate a case. But look at the 24 election. It's going to be between an incumbent president and a party that believes they're running against an illegal president. That means he's an occupier. We've never had an election like this. It's not going to be about two different philosophies. You know, you think about it, Lawrence. These Republicans are heir to the greatest generation. And what they did to keep democracy, to defeat autocracy, to defeat fascism. And they can't even get their comm shop to put out a statement congratulating the president-elect of the United States. I mean, you know, that's a pretty low bar compared to, like, you know, charging a beach or taking a machine gun nest. And it's like they've sort of forgotten what it means to be an American. It's this sort of party of grievance. There's no optimism. And it's really become a white grievance party. 85% of Trump's coalition was white in a country that's 59% white and rapidly becoming a minority majority country.
No one in the squad is prepared to vote for McCarthy to be chair. And even some blue dogs are like, unless we get anything, who knows, though. But here is AOC on Jake Tapper's show. To be clear, what happened was the Senate passed a continuing resolution for 45 days that had just about everything that they wanted except for Ukraine aid. It went over to the House. It passed with a majority of the votes coming from Democrats. And the continuing resolution basically will just punt for 45 days. And broadly, it seems like Democrats in the Senate and in the House and Republicans in both the Senate and the House think that the Ukraine aid is going to be added in its standalone bill over the next 2 or 3 weeks. But here is AOC.
What's your take on what just happened on the threat of a government shutdown and just the whole experience?
Well, I think the Republican Party right now is completely out of step with the American people. And what we saw today and what we saw this week leading up to this final hour, you know, compromise, not even a compromise, but really capitulation by the Republican Party, we saw them go through every single possible iteration of cutting benefits. They tried to cut across the board 30% of the budgets of critical agencies like the Social Security Administration. They voted, some of the most moderate members, quote unquote moderate members of the Republican Party, casted votes for things like 80% cuts under the Department of Education to low-income schools. This is not a moderate party, period. There are not moderates in the Republican Party. There are just different degrees of fealty to Donald Trump. But it starts with a lot of fealty, and then it goes to extreme fealty. And so we saw them go through every single iteration, walk through into every single wall, kind of run around the house like a Roomba. And until they found a door that House Democrats opened, they finally realized that we should not shut down the government in order to deny trans service members the ability to get health care, in order to deny female service members the ability to get an abortion. And, you know, they filed an extension for 45 days until we're back in here.
So
I'll tell you what I love about this messaging. Okay, just from a sheer, first off, for whatever reason, every single person in the administration and the leadership of the Democrats have all settled because of whatever focus group that they finally settled on, MAGA Republicans. And you notice she's not saying that. In fact, she is specifically addressing and critiquing that that whole construct. She says the only difference, none of them are not extreme. This is an extreme party. There are no Republican moderates. The only difference between one Republican and another Republican is how much they bow down to Donald Trump. And it ranges from they just get on their knees to they literally lie themselves on the ground and allow him to walk all over them. And that's exactly what should be going on here. There shouldn't be MAGA Republicans, and then the implication being that there are regular Republicans. There are no regular Republicans. They are all extreme. The only difference is some of them channel their extremeness through as close a proximity to Donald Trump as they can get. The rest of them are cutting aid for starving children.
Yeah. And it's good messaging in that sense, because the Republicans have never afforded the Democrats that same courtesy to distinguish between, say, the Squad, who they would say is extreme, and Nancy Pelosi. They're calling Biden a socialist. I mean, it's ridiculous. So yeah. The Democrats, it would behoove them to be clear eyed about that. But for my entire life on this planet, that has not been the case.
No, and it's not been the same to my life, although. What you don't get is, which we didn't have one, 15 years ago, were any Democrats
right.
getting on a weekend cable show and talking like this and basically saying, like, you know, I don't like your framing and I'm going to push a better one. And here it is.
She's also been doing that on immigration, I will say. There have been a lot of messaging gaps with the way that the Biden administration has responded to Republican framing. And it's unfortunate that, like, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has to take up that mantle. But it's good that she's there to do so, because otherwise it's just a complete vacuum. And the right will fill that void. You can't just ignore them. You have to provide a counter narrative. We played that clip of her talking about how there's essentially no alternative on immigration. It's just more militants, more criminalization. What is our alternate vision? Has there been any messaging the entire time Biden's been in office about the border that hasn't just been a variation of what the right has to say?
Yeah, which is,
that's just one example.
They say, no, we are doing it, which is about border.
Exactly.
Issues. Yeah,
exactly. We all agree that we have to be draconian. It's just a question of, like, how draconian can we be without being, you know, having images of our draconianness out. But nevertheless, this is good. This is good messaging, because you must extract as much of a political price as you can from this failure of the Republicans to actually run the majority in a way that is, like, in any way responsible. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen in 45 days, but already you've had, like, the stress that you have created in hundreds of thousands, if not millions of workers in this country, federal workers, private workers who have got federal contracts, the inability you have for our government to function properly when it can anticipate what its budget's going to be 6 weeks from now, 7 months from now, a year from now, whatnot. They must pay a political price. And she's out there basically just saying, you know, one, they're all extreme ideologically. Two, it's just a question of how high they're going to jump when Donald Trump says jump. And three, they don't know how to run anything. They're completely incompetent. They're bouncing around like a Roomba vacuum, she says. And it wasn't until the Democrats decided, we're going to help you out, and so that we can get the country's business going forward. That's exactly the story that should be told about these people. And it's a very easy one to sell, because it is exactly accurate.
Well, that's a lot of people. Thank you. It's because I got, we got. There's something about MAGA, MAGA country, MAGA, playing over again. MAGA, I got, we got, MAGA, MAGA, make America great again. And by the way, there's a word, disinformation. Think of it. And by the way, this is the most corrupt election. Think of it. You know what? I am not the one trying to undermine American democracy. I am the one trying to save American democracy. If you say it enough and keep saying it, they'll start to believe you. But you know, they say it over and over and over. If you say it enough and keep saying it enough, they'll start to believe you. And by the way, I got, we got. There's something about MAGA, MAGA country, MAGA, playing over again. MAGA, I got, we got, MAGA, MAGA, make America great again. It's okay to get along with heads of other countries, don't you think? Trump was so friendly with Russia. Think of it. You know, they say it over and over on the fake news media. Oh, there's a lot of them, but... The media in this country is corrupt. Camera just went off. And keep saying it. They'll start to believe you. Two cameras just went off. I think it's one of my greatest achievements. They don't like it when I do. Oh, gee, I'm so surprised. And by the way... There's something about MAGA, MAGA country, MAGA, play it over again, MAGA, I got, we got, MAGA, MAGA, make America great again. They go and target me, I'm gonna get Trump. A friend of mine said, you have to be the cleanest guy in history.
What?
They want to go to windmills, right? Windmills, wind, wind. They want to go, let's go build a windmill, Alice. Come on, wind. Nancy, she had the single biggest mass. This mass went from her hair all the way down to here. Look at you. Some of the women are a mess. That's true. Look at a woman. She's a mess. You actually look better. You just don't know it. And keep saying it. They'll start to believe you. Gee, I'm so surprised. And by the way, it's because I got, we got. There's something about MAGA, MAGA country, MAGA. Play it over again. MAGA, I got, we got, MAGA, MAGA. Make America great again.
You owe me.
Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
That's my attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When the system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your brother, Vladimir D. So, Gaia. Welcome to this Class War Battlefield podcast episode. I don't even know what to say about this week. I think everyone said a lot about it. Here's the thing, family. I have been thinking about this episode all week. And in fact, the first part of this two-parter, I recorded in the wake of McCarthy being thrown out. Now, you're probably sick of hearing about this, but trust me when I tell you, you need to keep your ears open. Because this is far more important than you think. Far more important. institution in the House of Representatives relies on the sanity of both political parties. We do not have a government that invites coalition building, which would have been smarter. We have a government that depends on machine politics. Now, this is a concept that we don't talk about anymore. The Republicans somewhat refer to machine politics when they talk about the urban centers and the politicians who control those urban centers. That is machine politics. Back in the 60s, the 50s, even the 70s, the 40s and before, the idea of machine politics was an everyday reality. Some of you might recall hearing in school, especially if you're my age, about Tammany Hall or the Daley family out of Illinois. These are examples of political machines that pulled in through the patronage system politicians or would-be politicians and churned out those who the machine didn't find useful. Kicked them out. In present day America, machine politics don't exist as it did 100 years ago, but they still do exist. When you see the ineptitude of certain politicians who continue to work for big business and special interests, yet they keep getting reelected, it's mainly because of that concept of machine politics. They are constantly reelected because the special interests want to keep them there. In many ways, it is this continuity that the institution built by the very smart and brilliant framers, tongue-in-cheek is what I had in mind there, these institutions rely on that continuity. Unfortunately, that continuity also breeds stagnation. Many of the greatest political tragedies in this country were based on political stagnation. The country demanded political action towards some greater end, and when that political action didn't occur, some calamity or tragedy happened. We are in a period of time where the country is suffering from, and many people have written about this, political paralysis. That phrase, political paralysis, is stagnation. It barely moves. And it barely moves because the cogs that turn within the political machine refuse to let it move. So predictable is this political reality that big media tells you every single election cycle, when it's federal election or it's a midterm, not only what the outcomes are going to be, but how long the party who is given the House of Representatives will have to try to enact something before gridlock stops them. Why can they predict it? Because they know what big business is going to do. They know what the lobbyists are going to do. The lobbyists are going to get in, and they're going to pay off the politicians. Not all of them, but there are some that they can grease the palms of in order to stop true change from going through. We are living in an age, though, where change is desperately needed. Not even just a little change. Big problems stare this country in the face. The biggest of them is the environment is rebelling against industrial society. And thus, the country must respond to tame down not the environment, but industrialism. Making corrections and changes and maneuvers to ensure that the planet and the environment can heal enough to allow us to continue living on her. But those who profit heavily, financially, from industrialization are working against the government's mandate to do something about industrialism's determination to seemingly destroy the livable ecosystems which we depend on. You may be asking now, what does all that have to do with McCarthy and him being excised from the speakership? The Republican Party has, for a very long time, been the party of big business. And when I say a very long time, I'm not talking 20, 30, 40, 50 years. They were the party of big business in the late 1800s. The progressive movement was a result of the Republicans getting their way and pushing the government aside in order to allow big business to do whatever they wanted to do. The Republicans were chiefly in the business of making the government, the federal government, subservient to one, states' rights, and two, big business. They've always been that way. And they had a good argument for why they were that way. Republicanism, at its core historical root, is aristocratic. The government doesn't serve all people, sure, it has a commonwealth mandate, but its primary concern is to serve the aristocracy, to give opportunity and to not necessarily regulate, but to keep balanced the aristocracy. That's true republicanism. And so, they saw it as their destiny, as their birthright, to make the government, the federal government, subjective subjugated, excuse me, to big business. They also were the party of staunch imperialism. I'm not saying here that the Democrats weren't, because many of the Democrats were. But they and to be fair, they moved from being imperialist to isolationist and back to imperialist to isolationist, but they followed that trend of being somewhat hyper-imperialist. Now, in the 1930s, a lot of Republicans were isolationists, so weren't a lot of Democrats. But there was also a strain within the Republican Party that had a strange affinity and gave speeches towards this affinity. They had a strange affinity for the Nazis and the fascist movements in Europe. There was a GOP civil war, somewhat unpronounced, but definitely announced, that took place in the immediate shadow of World War II. Eisenhower should be given great credit. Now, Eisenhower is a mixed bag of good and bad, but the man should be given great credit because he tried to resurrect the GOP from the wilderness when he ran for president. The GOP, who had been, for the most part, not everybody fell into this. There were some liberals and progressives, Republicans, who did not fit this bill. But the GOP, for the most part, had opposed the New Deal at every level. Not only did they oppose the New Deal, they opposed the United States getting involved in World War II until Pearl Harbor. And even then, there were some Republicans who still opposed the United States getting into World War II and suggested that FDR and members in his staff, particularly in the military department, I forget what the department was called back then, but it wasn't the DOD, they suggested and accused FDR and members within his circle of plotting to draw Japan's ire into attack the United States first, to draw the United States into World War II. There has been interesting revelations about those accusations in the past 30 years, but I digress on whether or not they are true or not. Again, though, Eisenhower tried to save the party. He did. And he tried to save the party because they had put themselves in such a position that without intervention, they were either going to cease to exist, which the wealthy didn't want that, or they were going to become a permanent minority party. So he went about trying to save them. Now, let's talk very quickly about the Republican Party ceasing to exist and why the wealthy didn't want that to happen. Understand, in the 1920s, the Democratic Party was somewhat in the same predicament that the Republicans were in the 1940s, late 40s particularly. The Democratic Party
had sold their soul. I mean, they had kind of sold their soul before, but they had really sold their soul to big business. And because of this, their popularity had kind of waned quite a bit. This is often not talked about in history of the United States, particularly pre-World War II history, but throughout the 1920s, the Roaring Twenties as they were called, radical organizations grew in popularity. Why? Because both parties were kind of seen as out of touch with the average person. Sure, things were roaring and good for a lot of people, but not for a lot of Americans, just for a lot of rich and what we would think of as middle-class people. Yes, yes, trickle-down did somewhat work, and there was an optimism that couldn't be denied. But, the average citizen wasn't dumb. They didn't believe for a moment that their lives were drastically improved because there was a lot of money sloshing around in a few pockets. And so, you had a lot of radical organizations growing in popularity. When the stock market crash happened in 1929, and the Great Depression was onset, and it began to really take hold, and people understood what the cause was, greed, malfeasance, criminal behavior within the financial sector. Those radical organizations, who were very popular, could draw on decades of warnings about capitalism and say, look, we told you 15 years ago, capitalism is unstable and it's going to destroy everything it touches because of its instability. And people could look at their record and say, well, they are radical, but they understood this a lot better than the liberals did, no matter what party, or the progressives did, no matter what party. They definitely understood more of it than the conservatives did, no matter what party. So yeah, we probably need to listen to these people a little bit more. That began the trend of pushing people off of the Democrats and Republicans towards socialist camps. There began to rise within the 1930s a real serious threat of a authentic, widespread third party movement, and that third party wasn't independents, it was socialists. Why? Because there was a understanding that both parties were essentially center-right. Yes, there were some center-left people, but they were centrist mostly and right-wing mostly. And so you needed a true left-wing party, hence the socialism. At the conclusion of World War II, with the death of FDR, there was serious talk throughout the country, particularly among folks who still had leftist orientation, of forming or trying to form a national third party. And that third party would be dedicated entirely to the left. There was a desire to fold into it other, you know, disaffected liberals and what have you, but also your socialists, your communists, your anarchists, come together, form a unified ticket and party structure, and pour all the ideas into one place to take on Democrats and Republicans. If they were successful, and the OSS, soon to be renamed the CIA and FBI and what have you, they were very much dedicated to disrupting those plans.
They were very much dedicated to disrupting those plans. But if the Republican Party ceased to be, that was going to leave a political hole. Now, was it likely that the Republican Party was going to cease to be? No. But if the Republican Party was a minority, a permanent minority party, and they were seen as out of touch with reality, what would have happened? Well, let's talk to California. If they're out of touch with reality, another party is going to come in that is connected to reality, and that's going to become the second party. That left the door open. Even if it wasn't, even if the party wasn't deliberately left-wing, it would most likely have a much further left-wing orientation than the Democratic Party did. And that would mean a party that was grassroots-based, not aristocratic-based. The wealthy went into action to stop that from occurring. Hence, Eisenhower's role in all of this. Now, quickly, quick shout out to my father, rest in peace, who he filled in a little bit of this when I was a kid. He told me some of this. So, you know, this wasn't stuff that I picked up from reading any books. I made a mention in another episode that a lot of black folks during that time period understood an alternative version of history because they served as housekeepers and servers among very powerful people. And when they got together in the community, they would talk about the stuff that they learned. And so sometimes, and my father was privy to some of this as a young man, because he was a very statuesque young man that looked good in a suit. So, you know, sometimes white people would invite him to places. But there'd be times where he'd be like, yeah, this is what they wrote in a book, but let me tell you what really happened. And it's like, well, how do you know? Well, because so-and-so used to clean their house and was actually there serving as a maid when all of this was being talked about. So, boom. So, you know, big shout out to him for that information. Back to the strand, though. So he did try to save the party. That attempt seemed to only hold its effect while he was in office. The moment he stepped away from being president, all hell broke loose. When Richard Nixon lost to Kennedy in 1960, the right-wing strand, which had always been there, took that loss as symbolic, but it wasn't symbolic, as a warning that they needed to get more right-wing and more extreme, more pro-corporatist, more pro-fascist, and they need to do it quickly. I'm not for this revision of Barry Goldwater. Oh, he was a nice guy because he went to Nixon and told him, look, we're going to vote to block. No. No, 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 no. You do not set in motion a political earthquake that puts into power people who hate folks who look like me and want to undo everything that gave me the right to not be a slave and not be oppressed in the United States. And then just because you look at one sleazebag and tell them we're going to vote you out or we're going to vote to impeach you, no, you don't get to rewrite history based on that. Barry Goldwater was a terrible person who, because Richard Nixon lost in 1960, helped to lead the charge to make the Republican Party into an extremist, pro-corporatist, and he wouldn't have called it this, but a pro-fascist, because corporations were supposed to have supremacy over government, political party. That strand, which Richard Nixon pulled on to win in 1968, that anti-leftist, anti-black, though not really, anti-radical, anti-communitarian, though not really, because he really didn't do that. He did believe in communitarian theory. Autocratic vision, which really drove the party. That strand began to get extracted and magnified by Barry Goldwater. It began to get pumped full of, well, ego. it began to expand thanks to Barry Goldwater. And I really don't believe people appreciate. I don't really believe people appreciate the war that took place within those 4 years. I think it was Ornstein and Mann who wrote the book Rule and Ruin, R-U-L-E, and Ruin, R-U-I-N, where they write about the role of liberal and progressive Republicans in setting up and propelling forward and passing, that's what kills me, passing the civil rights, the landmark civil rights legislation of the 1960s. Moves that were not unthinkable back then, that were just smart politics. I mean, they could justify it based on economic realities, but it was still smart politics. But those moves began to ignite within the other portion of the Republican Party a desire to exclude, to kick out those elements that would be pro-civil rights, pro-black, pro-brown, pro-anything that wasn't white supremacist-based. And you saw what began as a nod to extremism, by Barry Goldwater turn into a move. It took almost 20 years. It took about 15 to 20 years to really take root. But that nod to extremism moved from just a nod to slow and deliberate expulsion. The Powell memo, along with the memo proposing a GOP TV, seemed to both wink and nod towards the development of a system to bring into the Republican Party non-liberal, non-progressive Republican members. And though it didn't really take effect until the mid to late 80s, the GOPAC strategy really put into motion the need or the desire to bring extremist, neoconservative, anti-federalist, anti-government, pro-corporate Republicans into the Republican Party. In short, that strain, which was pumped full of some air in 1964, began to predominate the inflowing air, the inflowing current, excuse me, not air, but current, that was pushing forward the Republican Party into the 1990s. So that by 1994, the incoming class of Republican politicians were overwhelmingly from this strain of extremist Republicans who were very debased. Now, you know, people look back at the 90s and say, but yeah, but those people weren't these people. Are you certain about that? Are you really certain about that? There's not much difference from the people who came in 1994, the people who were elected, their rhetoric, and the extremist Republicans today. There's not much difference, except for time and the capacity to be able to see that what they're saying is extremist and extreme and destructionist and nihilist. Newt Gingrich watered this extremism. He watered it. And he, for a while, thought he could control it as Speaker of the House. But there's no controlling it. There is no controlling it. It destroys what it touches, everything it touches. That's why I'm not surprised that this happened. At the core center of this strain of conservatism is power worship. It is autocracy. It is the greatest man, the first citizen, at the center of the fascists. It is the desire to have a game of King of the Hill until one person is left and that person holds that position as long as they can. There is no, as Stuart Stevens put it, there is no governing philosophy. I've been saying that for a while. There is no governing philosophy. These people know one thing and one thing only, power. That's it. Power. That's it. I want to talk briefly about McCarthy's removal. Look at his face. Go back and watch his announcement that, you know, the resolution or what have you had passed and the chair was now vacant. Look at his face when he looks at, I believe he was looking at the Republican side, but he might have been looking at the Democratic side. But I believe he was looking at the Republican side. He was looking to my right, which would have been to his left, so maybe that was the Democratic side. Nancy Pelosi had originally said that she would stand with him. Well, Nancy wasn't there. And I suspect Nancy also heard what he said when he went on television over the weekend. Probably didn't sit pretty well with her. Here's the thing. They have shown to you what they are capable of and what their ultimate goal has always been destruction. Usurpation of institutional norms. Removal of legitimate power. Obstruction. Obstruction in stopping real solutions from healing the country. At the end of the day, what these people truthfully 100% have to offer is games with your life. I take no joy, guys. I really do. I take no joy in having to say that. I take no joy in having to say that. I take no joy in having to say that. And I mean that. I really mean it. I take no joy in having to say it. Because what you are witnessing is the destruction of one leg of the institution of political normality or political normalcy in this country. And presently, there is nothing waiting to replace it, which means you are looking at an unstable political reality, which breeds problems. It breeds problems. Why? Because that instability invites into it unstable people. And what drives unstable people? Ego. Grandeur. False confidence. False identity. Cult of personality. All of these things drive unstable people. But not only do all of these things drive unstable people, I give Chris Hedges credit for this one. Death, death, death is at the heart of a lot of unstable people, but they are not brave enough to commit suicide. And I don't mean to make light of suicide. I have lost friends to it. But when you personally are engaged in self-destructive behavior that could and possibly will lead to your death, taking others with you deliberately or unconsciously just because it will allow you to say, well, I didn't die via suicide, is cowardice. There are a lot of people who march to the tune of autocracy that have death wishes. They hate life. But, and I once heard this on, I want to say Family Guy, but don't quote me on that, but they are too much of a coward to end their relationship with it. So they would prefer to take others with them. Now, before you tell me, oh, that's kind of dark, and that's kind of wrong, because you're glorifying suicide. I'm not glorifying suicide. Anybody who is having suicidal thoughts within the sound of my voice, please get help. Call and get help. But I'm not dumb either. There are some people who get help and still end up at those cold waters. And there are those who would end up at those cold waters, but would prefer to do so by taking others with them. Death is the encouragement for some of these people. And truthfully, that can be attributable to the nihilist concept. Nihilists destroy political institutions for destruction's sake. They have no real replacement for that destruction. Sound familiar? They destroy to destroy. Because ultimately, they hate themselves and they hate the world. But, I apologize for that. If you heard that loud machine that just ran through here. But they would prefer to destroy the world than to destroy themselves. We are looking at something. We are all looking at something that premeditates something worse if we are not politically engaged. What is that worst thing? I don't know. I do not know. But what I do know is if the Republican Party suffers huge losses in 2024 because of this, which I believe they may, and the Democrats may control all three houses because of the things the Republicans have done in the last couple of years, they'll have nothing to lose. They'll have nothing to lose. And when is a person most dangerous? When they have nothing to lose. This strain is not something that's going to be leaving soon, so y'all might want to buckle up. Y'all might want to buckle up because it's coming for all of us who do not subscribe to it. Now, I don't mean that in the sense that it's going to be knocking down your door and, you know, this is going to turn into a replay of the Nazi nightmare. No. But everywhere you look, especially this coming up here, you're going to be fighting off these fascists and this strain of conservatism. Why? Because people who believe it are everywhere. They are. And they are determined to take their country back from an invisible enemy, namely you, because you don't believe what they believe. The good thing is, you outnumber them. The question is, are you going to show up to make sure that they know that you outnumber them and that you are willing to take everything from them to defeat them? That's the question. What is that Willy Wonka clip? You get nothing. That's kind of where you got to be at mentally now. Another quick word about McCarthy, and then I'll be done with this part. McCarthy is the type of Republican that really has worked to destroy the Republican Party. He is about power for power's sake. So isn't Gates. Well, you can't build a country or a nation off of people who think that way. Because all they're going to do is tear down that which is built if they can't possess ultimate control of it. Heed the warning, y'all. Heed the warning. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, you know, you can always reach out to me. I love hearing from all of y'all. Check me out at radio, the number 4ALL.net. Type in Class War Battlefield Podcast. And click into any of the shows. Hit the contact contributor button and you can send me a message there. You can also send me a message at my new email address, cwbpodcastmain@gmail.com. You can also hit me up at Class War Battlefield Podcast on the Facebooks, even though I may be starting something on Instagram soon, because, well, I guess Instagram is owned by Facebook, so I guess it really doesn't matter. Anyway, you can hit me up at any of those spots. You can also donate to the show, and I encourage you to do so at CWB Podcast. Hit me up on PayPal. Hit me up on Cash App. $2, $4, $5, $10, $20, $30, $50. Whatever you can do a month, y'all. It helps out. It really does. Big up to Dr. Obatshaka, the original. The original revolutionary. Big up to Dr. Karen Hunter, Dr. Craig Carr, in class with Carr right there, Black Power Media, Roland Martin No Filter, the Professional Left Podcast, Best of the Left Podcast. God, man, Best of the Left Podcast has been going on for a minute. They're coming up on their 20th year soon. Wow, Jay, man, wow. Man, God bless you on that one. Tom Hartman, Nicole Sandler, Christopher Titus's Armageddon update, which I've always been a fan of Christopher Titus, so to see him doing political stuff is just freaking brilliant. Love it, love it, love it, love it. Lewis Black's Rantcast, Countdown with Keith Olbermann, Majority Report. I'm always taking their clips. I should probably shout them out, right? Oh, to the boys at, man, to the Remix Bros. Listen, I came across the Remix Bros. They used to actually be called WTF Bros, right? And I came across them during the COVID lockdown when I was still working because I worked at a medical equipment company. And I came across some of their videos and immediately fell in love with them. And they're very talented, just absolutely magnificently talented. And so, you know, I'm a big fan of their work. I never knew Donald Trump could spit the way he spit. Man, they do really good work with him. Man, who else? Democracy Now? I mean, Democracy Now has a huge following. They don't really need me shouting them out, right? Millennials Are Killing Capitalism. Interesting podcast. Extra Environmentalism no longer publishes new podcasts, but their archives are really, really good. I think, yeah, I'll call that a wrap for the present moment. Law and Disorder, Sojourner Truth. Yeah, call that a wrap right now. So, again, questions, comments, concerns, reach out to me. Love all y'all. Until the next one, I'm your brother, Vladimir Diesel Gaia. And I've been waiting for something to happen for a week or a month or a year, y'all. Till next one. Peace. There's a shadow on the
of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone, and they're alive.